folks, let's light this candle, as they said back in the day. This is Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working Special Edition, brought to you by Regions. The focus of these Tuesday, Thursday shows are to help people like you and me, small business owners, get through the COVID economy. And every day it seems like there's new news that suggests that this is going to be the new way of life going forward. There's equal amount of new news saying this is about to end within an hour or two, and we'll all be out on the streets again, hanging out, linking arm to arm, singing We Are the World, and we'll remember this to our children. I don't know what to believe. I do know this, that the businesses that I'm talking to and interviewing and all that kind of stuff are struggling. So let's figure out how to react, and that's the focus of the show. Let me tell you what you have coming up. We got a lot of good content today, and one of my favorite types of speakers to hear are futurists. And I know a couple of these people, and they're very good at they're not predictors of the future. They're evaluating the trends that are influencing us now and making guesses on how those trends are to shape things to come. And I've reached out to one that I was introduced to a couple of weeks ago, who's calling in a little bit from Toronto. His name is Richard Warzel, and he is going to give us a handful of predictions about how he thinks things are going to go. But most importantly, he's going to explain to us the value of backcasting, which is the opposite of forecasting. Forecasting, we look down the road and we make predictions of where things will be. Backcasting, we look down the road at a date and begin to back up from that date to today to think, what do I need to do now to be prepared for that date? And that date in our conversation is going to be the resumption of business as normal. Backcasting. Richard Warzel coming up after the first break. After Richard, we're going to have Rebecca Byrne. Rebecca's going to talk to us about the grants that her organization has made available, the Community Foundation of South Alabama. We're going to talk to her about those grants. Who can apply for them? Who are they for? Where's the money coming from? They've stepped up to help people in times of need. Rebecca will talk to us about that. And as you know, if you're a fan of the show, that we're going to have our motivational, inspirational finish. And I've got Terry Ritchie scheduled for that. He's the associate pastor at Spring Hill Baptist Church. Comes highly recommended. I've not met him personally. We've talked over the phone. He's going to give us some ways, some step-by-step things to do to get through troubling times, times of uncertainty. So he'll be on probably around 1:53, 1:54. Don't forget about 1:52. I summarize the show and give you what I think are the greatest points, the takeaway points for the show, so that you'll be able to run with them down the road. Now, Sean and I were talking just prior to the break about the importance of the social media, and we are beginning to do some new things in support of this show on the social media world to make sure these messages are getting out. So I want you to find us. What's Working with Cam Marston on Instagram? What's Working with Cam Marston on Facebook? We also have the same title via Twitter. And I want to give you the text number. What we're going to do is line up a lot of the points today and send them out to you in a document that you can either forward, pass around for your own team. I'm going to send you PDFs of Rebecca Byrne's new disaster relief funds through the text. That number is 44222, and here's how you work it. Text What's Working, no apostrophes, no spaces, to 44222, and you're going to get a list of the high points of today's show. Now, the show What's Working began originally as an exploration of business trends. And I want to give you a sneak peek of what's coming up tomorrow night, Wednesday night. And I think this one is touching as much as relevant. We were going to look at, and this was prior to the crisis hitting, the business of food trucks and see how they work. Who are they? Where do people get these motivations? As you can well imagine, the food truck business has taken an interesting turn. These folks are struggling. We talk tomorrow night to Jennifer Alford. Jennifer and her husband own August House Restaurant, which began back in the day as a food truck. He came off an oil rig as a chef and said, we're done with this. I'm buying a food truck. We're also going to talk to Artius Walker. Artius runs Smack Shack Food Trucks, and he's got a great story. Maybe I'll get into that in a little while. When we come back, Richard Warzel, futurist, backcasting. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. Listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. This is Cam Marston, and on the line with me, I've got Richard Warzel. Now, Richard is a futurist. He's calling in today from Toronto, Canada, and eager to hear a little bit about what he's got. But first, Richard, Thank you for calling in. I appreciate your time. You really have no skin in the game down here, but you're willing to give us your expertise. Again, thank you so much. Welcome to What's Working.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me. And as far as I'm concerned, we're all in this together. If we can help each other out, why wouldn't we?
I agree. And that's music to our ears. Tell me first, before we get into the specific content you and I have discussed about the show today, what it is that a futurist does. People think, well, they should all be fabulously wealthy because they can go to a casino and know exactly what the next card's coming. Tell me about the work of a futurist.
A futurist is not somebody who predicts the future. A futurist is somebody who helps people prepare for the uncertainty of the future. So just like a biologist is somebody who studies biology, a futurist is somebody who studies the future with the intention of helping people prepare for that uncertainty. So think of it this way. I'm a planner, not a prophet.
Very good. A planner, not a prophet. And do you typically look a set period out? You know, the future is forward. How far do your studies generally go?
Well, it depends on for whom I'm working. Some people, like businesses, will often say they have a five-year time horizon, but they actually privately will confess to have a three-year time horizon, and often they have a one-year time horizon. But I've done studies for people as long as 1,000 years. That was a very special case. Mostly it's around 5 to 10 years, but in a situation like we're in now, you shorten up the time horizon because the uncertainties are much greater. How do you predict something that's going to happen, or how do you anticipate something that's going to happen in 3 years' time when you don't know what's going to happen in 6 months' time?
I tell you what, you've left me slack-jawed to wonder what type of organization wants to know what's going to happen in 1,000 years, but I'm going to take my brain away from that because that's not what we're here to talk about.
Right.
And instead go into a couple of the comments that you and I had when we were on the phone, and then get into what I want to be the instruction and the value of backcasting. So one of the things that you said on the phone and that you sent me in your outline is don't discount. Now, people are eager for business right now and are willing to drop their prices to get any cash flow, but your position is don't discount. Could you expand on that?
Sure. When you discount, let's suppose you offer people a 10% discount. Given the economic environment we have had up until recently, 10% is an insult to most people. You know, I wouldn't walk across the street for a 10% discount. But 10% off your top line is a lot more than that off your bottom line. And it can, depending on what business you're in, it can render the sale unprofitable. So why do that when instead you should look for ways of innovating by offering people more for the same price rather than the same for less price? So, for example, if you're in the restaurant business, rather than cut the price of your entrees, say, if you order, you know, these entrees or an appetizer plus entree, we'll give you dessert for free. Then you're paying the wholesale cost of the dessert instead of taking the retail cost off the top. So discounting is almost self-defeating.
We've got a restaurant locally who was saying if you put in an order of over X many dollars, I want to say it was $35, we'll give you half off this list of wines. Is that discounting to you?
No, I think if they are getting the wine, they're probably giving you the wine at their cost.
Yeah.
But that's after they've made the profit on the food. So it is exactly what I was talking about, giving people more for the same price rather than trying to cut the price.
Yeah, and it's been very effective, and it works very well on one person whom I know very well. There's another one that you mentioned here. The innovate, find new ways of doing things, and it reads my Taylor's recession specials. If you would expand on that.
Sure. A couple of recessions ago, the clothing business was hit really hard, and yet the people that do my clothing, the tailors that make my clothes, were doing okay. I mean, they weren't minting money, but they were okay. They were staying open when a lot of people didn't. And I was talking to them. I have very friendly terms with them. And I asked, what are you doing that's working? He said, well, we have a monthly special. What we've done is we've gone to our suppliers and said, what have you got that we can offer somebody a really special deal? And so every month they would work with their suppliers and get something that was an incredible deal based on what was available by the suppliers. So, for example, one month they offered a custom-tailored tuxedo based on a stock single for $99.
Wow.
Now, I looked at that and I said, I can do that. So I went in and bought a hand-tailored tuxedo for $99, and it was great. But And I asked them after the recession was over whether it had helped, and they said some weeks that was all we sold. So, yeah, I mean, innovate. Don't just try to do the same old, and hope that it'll work. Think of new ways of appealing to your customers or clients, but also work with your suppliers to find a way of giving some people something really special.
Did these ideas from the tailor, for example, did that last, or was it over when the quote-unquote recession ended? Has it become a part of their business?
No, it's not really a part of their business anymore, although I think it's still a great idea. Department stores used to do that on a regular basis. They would put in their orders, and then at the end of the season, they'd say, okay, what do you got left over that I can really give people a super deal on? But I think that kind of has gone by the board in recent years.
Let's talk about one of the more of the things that you sent me, and then we'll get into backcasting. And I love this one because it has so much potential. It reads, think about how you want to be remembered, because people will remember how you behave.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, everybody is under pressure. And the people that you notice in this environment are the people who are stepping up for their communities and for their neighbors. We also are noticing people who are doing selfish things and trying to forget about their neighbors and the needs of their community. So if you're planning to get through this, think about how you want to be remembered. So it may take some effort. It may not take a lot of money, but it may take some coordination with the other people around you, your community, on a crowdfunding basis or working with competitors. But think about things that you can do for your community, and not only will that help your reputation, but it will also, and psychologists will verify this, it will also make you feel better and make you feel more proactive. So it works for your community, it works for your future reputation, and it works for your state of mind today.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Let's get into the roots here. Backcasting. Now, forecasting is looking at a date down the road and making predictions to get to that date. Backcasting is the opposite, and it has a very germane connotation right now. Take it away.
Yeah, okay. Backcasting, as opposed to forecasting, means putting yourself into the future that you want to have emerge, and then walking backwards to the present. So, for example, I'm working with a group of food service industry people. I've done quite a lot of work in food service. And I've developed a workshop with them that I'm doing for free, by the way, called Rehearsing the Recovery. The idea being, let's say it's 6 months from now that we're getting back towards normal. I don't know if that's the date. You need to listen to the health professionals. Don't listen to the politicians. Listen to the health professionals as to when that date is. But let's say it's 6 months. 6 months from now, you're going to reopen. What is it you're going to need to have done in order to reopen successfully? Okay, you're going to need to think about rent and what your landlord. You're going to need to think about your suppliers. You're going to need to think about how do you attract your customers back. You need to think about your staff and your employees. You're going to need to think about the banks. So write all this stuff down and act as if you're opening up tomorrow. So you get everything down, you've thought it through, and you've got it on paper. Now you start that's the future you want, to open the way that you want, what is known as the desired future. Now you start walking backwards from that desired future into the present. So for example, and this is not difficult, but it's a different way of thinking than we're used to, so it takes some time to wrap your mind around it. So if you're going to, one of the things you've got to accomplish is you've got to deal with your landlord. You're behind on the rent and so on and so on. So if you will have come to an agreement with your landlord that you're going to spread the missing rent payments out over a period of, say, 12 months, what are you going to need to have accomplished 5 months from now in order to be able to be in a position to do that by the sixth month? So what do you need to do 5 months from now to prepare you to have dealt with your landlord by the time you reopen? Okay, so you probably need to be having ongoing discussions. You need to probably have to sit down and offer him or her some projections as to the way your business is likely to go. You've got to offer them some reassurance. So that's what you're going to have done by 5 months in order to be prepared for 6 months. Or let's say you're going to reconnect with your customers in 6 months. Well, okay, if you're going to reconnect with them, if you're going to let them know that you're opening, what will you have had to have done 5 months from now to prepare them, to be in a position to let them know that you're reopening and that they have a reason to come and see you? And then once you've got that and you've written all those things down as to what you're going to need to do in 5 months to be able to reopen in six, then you take the next step back and say, okay, if I'm going to accomplish these things by the end of the fifth month, what do I need to have done by the end of the fourth month? Okay, so I've got to be, for example, in the fifth month, you're going to prepare to send out a blast to all your clients and customers and at the reopening. So in the fifth month, you need to know who those clients and customers are. So in the fourth month, you need to be putting together a list of who they are and how to contact them. Then you walk back to the third month. You know, what do you need to do? And essentially, you walk all of these points all the way back to the present day.
Yeah.
And that gives you, you'll wind up with hundreds of things you need to do.
Wow.
But what they will do is they will give you a path to walk from the present into the future that you want. So that's how to use backcasting to take you into the future. And by the way, it's a lot of work.
It sounds like a lot of work. If you're running seminars on this, and I suspect they last a day or longer.
At least.
Yeah. Tell me this. Are there some common stumbling blocks that most of your clients struggle with that you could advise us on?
You mean conceptual or practical?
Well, let's start with conceptual.
Okay, the conceptual ones are they have to get their minds around the concept. As I said, this is not difficult. This is not rocket science. But it's not the way we normally think of things. We normally talk about starting from the present and working forward. This is doing the absolute reverse. And there really aren't even any good tenses, you know, language tenses, verb tenses, to describe it. So when I say, what would you have to have had done in month five that enables you to do X in month six, that's very clumsy because
yes.
It's not the way we normally speak. So conceptually, it's just a matter of getting over that hurdle of, oh, I get it. Once you've got it, it's simple. But until you get it, it's kind of confusing.
What about the practical stumbles?
The practical stuff is that when you do this, you're going to have unrealistic expectations about what you can do when. So what you're really going to need to do is work backwards and forward. So once you come up with let's say you wind up with 200 things that you need to do to be able to reopen in 6 months, starting today and then next month and the month after and month after, you're going to find that some of the things you need to do, you haven't properly costed out, you haven't given an adequate amount of time, or you've forgotten people that you need to include. So one of the parts of the process is it's going to highlight the stumbling blocks that you hadn't thought of before. So you put everything down on paper, a better way of doing things is you put it on Post-it notes and you put them on a great big wall, ending with your end goal. You know, we're reopening. Then you put the what do we need to do by the end of 6 months in order to reopen at the end of 6 months. Below that, and then you break those down. So you've got the present day at the bottom of the chart.
Yes.
Then what you can do is you can move the Post-it notes up and down as you adjust the time and the amount of money involved. So it gives you a planning wall that will allow you to move upwards to your ultimate goal.
The goal of this, I assume, is to prevent surprises. In other words, you didn't get left flat-footed in any of this, that it was a methodical process, and on the date that you set out there, everything runs smoothly and you're back to normal.
Well, it won't run smoothly, but it'll run a hell of a lot better than if you don't do these things, because what you're really doing is you're rehearsing the future. You're walking through, mentally walking through the steps you have to take, and it will not prevent surprises from happening. But one of the big advantages of doing this is not necessarily having a plan, although that is very valuable. The big thing is that when surprises do happen, you'll have a much better grasp of what the possibilities are. There's an apocryphal story of a general who was famous for doing detailed plans.
30 seconds, Richard.
somebody asked him, why do you do that when you say, when there's a truism that no battle plan survives contact with the enemy? And he said, well, that's true, but this allows me to improvise with greater intelligence. And that's what this does. It gives you more mental flexibility to cope with surprises when they emerge, because you've got all the other pieces in your mind.
Richard, you sent me a PDF that I forgot to mention on the air of this process. Is that right?
Yes. Some of the things I didn't describe, but the process itself is given in great detail.
And I'll make that available at the text. 44222. Send what's working to 44222. Richard, thank you so much for your time.
And to everybody in Alabama.
Thank you, bud. I want to thank Richard Warzel for his time all the way from Toronto on backcasting. I may not have been clear when I came off the that last segment. He sent me a PDF document that's kind of an ebook on how to go about this process. And if you want a copy of that, I will load that up into the email service after the show sometime. Text what's working to 44222, let's say around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I'll have that set up and ready for you to receive. On the line right now, Rebecca Byrne. Rebecca is the president and CEO of the Community Foundation of South Alabama. Rebecca, thank you for your time. Welcome back to the radio. I understand you're on a lot these days.
Well, I guess I'm a good bit, but obviously wish it for other purposes, but it's good to be with you this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Well, I want to thank you for the support of our show. You've been a great advertiser of ours. I appreciate the confidence you give, and I want to talk about these two funds that I've been told about and ask you to describe the two of them for me, where they come from, what they're for, who they apply for, et cetera.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to, and I appreciate, Cam, what you do for our community, and appreciate so much your supporting our efforts, because it's so important and critical to get the word out to people in the community about what is going on now, particularly with regard to our COVID-19 response to the so many people who've been affected by this coronavirus pandemic. We actually have two relief funds that have been established at the Community Foundation. Back in March the 23rd, we, along with the City of Mobile, established a disaster relief fund for Mobile County. We wanted to respond as quickly as we could to those individuals who were either furloughed or lost their jobs or had immediate needs with regard to what was happening in the community. And so with that, we created a disaster relief fund. We seeded it with some funds from the Community Foundation and reached out to businesses, other foundations, individuals who are interested to please respond by providing donations. And we've gotten a very generous response from the community. We have over 400,000, which our advisory committee is planning to announce this week, the grantees who will be receiving funding from this fund. This was an invitation only grant opportunity. We were reaching out to 12 nonprofits in our community who historically and have a lot of experience in dealing with responding to some basic health and social needs of community residents. And so we've reached out and are going to be evaluating their applications and making announcements later this week as to where these funds will go to help within Mobile County. But we also will be pivoting and moving and to respond to all 8 counties in our footprint with the COVID-19 response and relief fund. Traditionally, we have a standard competitive grant-making cycle in the spring, so it was going to be occurring anyway, but we decided to dispense, at least temporarily, with our Closing the Opportunity Gap initiative and move into responding to the COVID-19 needs of all 8 counties. And so those counties include Baldwin, Choctaw, Clark, Conecuh, Escambia, Monroe, Washington, and Mobile. So all 8 counties, any nonprofits in those 8 counties, would be invited to participate. So we have all the information with regard to that grant cycle, which will start open on May the 8th on our website. So we encourage nonprofits to go there. We've tried to keep the application simple. We are, like I said, trying to be very responsive, very efficient, and turn the request around as quickly as possible, because we know we're trying to be very responsive to people's needs, and that won't be a, it'll be a pretty quick turnaround, not the traditional 3 month way, but more like a month. So those are our plans.
When you speak to these nonprofits that are looking for the help, what is their most common denominator? What are they most experiencing right now?
We have found, and we see this CAM across the country. You know, we have a network with other community foundations, but within our community, the basic needs such as food pantries are really very extremely busy right now. A utility assistance, rent assistance, housing, shelter. Families with young children on free and reduced lunch, and families that have low-wage workers have a lot of needs. But those areas, medical supports and child care, are other areas of focus that we'll be responding to. But those basic needs are really in much demand right now. So many people have either been furloughed or laid off. It's just an incredibly difficult time for many underserved populations at this point.
So if there's people that are listening right now that feel like they could use some of the help that you're referring to, let's say rent assistance or healthcare needs or something like that, they don't come. I'm understanding how this works. They're not coming to you. They're coming to one of the other organizations who you're funding. Is that correct?
The process that we're following at this point is that we are funding the nonprofits that have the history and experience with dealing with these community safety nets. And we're providing the funding to those nonprofits. They, in turn, will respond to those individual needs, if individuals or families or others. But we are encouraging also anyone who is listening who would like to participate in these efforts. We are reaching out to individuals. We've had several businesses who've responded who may not necessarily have been affected personally by the crisis, who are being very generous in their donations. We are accepting any donations, either online or by mail. You can give us a call. We really would appreciate everyone trying to respond and reach out to these individuals. We want to, you know, to be thoughtful and considerate with what they're going through at this point, and try to get these folks to be able to sustain their families.
Is there any what I would consider non-traditional nonprofits that you're funding on this? Let's say, I'm pulling out of the back of my head here, some sort of pet adoption. That's not what you're there for, is it?
Not at this point, Cam. Certainly with phase one, what we're assigning is sort of the basic needs are needing to be met, and we have the benefit of seeing where other community foundations who are a little bit further ahead of us on the curve. And what we're finding is that first wave of needs are the human health resources that need to be met. Perhaps on a second phase, other needs will come up. We know that other nonprofits are not necessarily, or they're not able to be at a place where they're going to find that their donors are not going to be able to respond like they used to, or they too will be affected by that. So, you know, there'll be other phases perhaps down the road, but right now with where we are in this community, we're still responding for, sort of, like I said, the food needs, utilities, yeah, rent assistance, those sorts of things are what's primary in people's minds right now.
So when you reached out to the business to help the funding of these funds, when you reached out and asked for the money, were they, I suspect if you did it amongst the, what I call the triage mode, and perhaps we're still in the triage mode, but the initial triage mode, were they mostly receptive? My feeling and my hope in my head is that everybody has found a way to support one another, and I want to hear how they reacted to your requests.
You know, beautifully, actually, Cam, and you know, we know that we're not the only funder or organization that's having an effort. We see others doing it as well, and so it's I believe that the community has responded in a very generous way. Certainly, businesses. I can think of one in particular who called and said, "Look, we want to help. We're going to give you some now." We don't even really know how much the needs are, but please call us back if we can help again. I mean, so we get our arms wide open and hoping that people will respond, and they are in many different ways. But we're seeing people do so many acts of generosity and kindness. It's extremely heartwarming to see community rise up to try to take care of those and try to make sure that, you know, we can get on an even keel and certainly support individuals and families, and hopefully these businesses, those that have been affected, will be able to right themselves and open the doors back up again.
Perhaps there's a business that's listening right now that says, you know, we'd like to get involved in, through you, Rebecca, to support this community. I can't imagine that you'd turn down a donation right now, would you?
We would not, and I would also like to share with anyone listening, and we've shared this on our website and all of our materials that we have sent out, is that there is no, all the donations are going straight back to these organizations that serve the individuals and families. There is no administrative fee. The purpose of this is to make sure that all donations are being received and are being used by those in need. So we want people to know that when we thought about having this sort of an emergency relief fund, should any emergency happen in the future, we were prepared for it. And when this came up, we had already determined that there would not be any administrative fees. So anyone that wants to donate, know that all 100% of your donation is going back to those who need the help.
So you're serving as a clearinghouse for the organizations that truly need your help, and the businesses that want to get involved, or individuals that want to get involved in supporting their community, can place those dollars with you, and you will appropriate them to the organizations that, like I said, truly need the help.
That's correct. We're the vehicle for the donations to come in and for the donations to go out as efficiently as possible. We do, as I say, have an advisory committee or others who will look at the opportunities. We research the needs, the immediate needs that are primary right now at this point in time.
That's great.
Under those and get the donations to those nonprofits that can help.
Rebecca, in the text offering I'll give to listeners, I'll put links to these funds if anybody's interested in learning more, as well as a link to your website for the organizations that either want to apply or perhaps want to give money to the effort. Thank you so much for your work, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoy being with you.
You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. And let's do the notes. Let's do, here's the quick notes that I jotted down from our guests today before we get Associate Pastor Terry Ritchie on the line. Number one, backcasting. You look at the date in the future and you work backwards from that. You work backwards to the present. You ask the question, when do the things need to happen that will get us open and fully functioning by the date that you forecast? Work backwards. It's not how we normally think. When you got to get in, you got to kind of work with your head to think this way versus thinking forward, you're thinking backwards. And many people have unrealistic expectations on how to do this. Don't forget, I'm going to send you the PDF of this document from Richard if you subscribe to the text line, or at least text that What's Working to 44222. Rebecca Byrne, they've got two funds going right now. There's the Disaster Relief Fund in Mobile, and there's the one for the 8 counties that they represent. They're looking for donations, as always, as well as applicants to take the money out of these funds and to apply them to what it sounds like, and this is my term but not hers, the core need that serves the constituents, their core needs of health care, of food, of rent assistance, etc. These notes will be available as a couple of other things on the text line, but let's get into what I've really looked forward to today. And that is Associate Pastor Terry Ritchie, pastor at Spring Hill Baptist Church. Terry, thank you for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for your invitation, Cam. I appreciate it.
We try to finish every show with a motivational, inspirational thought. And I was introduced to you from a mutual friend of ours. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I'll turn the mic over to you and let you get us the way to think.
Well, I've been on staff at Spring Hill for about 37 years. I've done several different jobs here. I'm associate pastor now, do pastoral care, and right now also doing administration and general things around the church. I am, my wife is a graphic designer here in the city, and I have two daughters who are married and four granddaughters. So I swim in the estrogen pool, and a minute ago one of my granddaughters knocked on my office door and brought me some flowers she had picked in the field out behind the church.
Well, I can't imagine a better setup for the message that you've prepared for us today, Terry. I turn the mic over to you. Tell us, help us set our minds about what's going on right now.
Well, you know, a little over 4 weeks ago, when we began hearing the words COVID-19 and social distancing and quarantine, our lives began to change pretty radically, and we tried to keep things as stable as possible, thinking this would just be a 2 week run before it was back to normal. But I'm sensing now that we're tired, and we're beginning to become weary and depressed and short-tempered, and we've experienced loss. And when you experience loss, there is a grief process you go through, and it's not linear. It's kind of cyclical and random at times. But the denial, anger, and depression, and bargaining, and, you know, and the fatigue has set in so terribly, and so that's where I think we are now. And it's affecting lives, not just here in the West, but our entire world. And we need to remember this, though. As long as we have breath, we have hope. If we look to God as people of God, we have the promise of Christ's presence, that he is with us, and he can give us what we need emotionally and in our inner being to sustain us. So I challenge you and challenge myself each day to find purpose in being a part of a community. Connect with people around you. Draw encouragement by giving and receiving care and showing love to one another. You know, quarantine does not have to mean that we're completely isolated. We can take walks and sit in the sun and see the beauty of God's creation. We can call one another and write and Zoom and FaceTime, wave at neighbors, or like I did with one of my friends just yelled across the street at him the other day, and we were yelling back and forth and connecting with one another. But we are to be the body of Christ and really a part of humanity by coming together and offering prayers, calling on our Heavenly Father to give us strength and wisdom and to guide us each day. And let these things that we profess and that we want come to life, and let the judgment and division and selfishness all disappear. The love and care of others is contagious too, and so is fear, and sometimes our fear drives us. But in Scripture, Christ has told us, stop being afraid. Over 300 times we're told in Scriptures, don't be afraid, or stop being afraid. The prophet Isaiah wrote, do not fear, I have redeemed you, I've called you by name in your mind. So let's turn to him and let this event change us into a gentler, kinder, more loving people. For we're all alike and that we need one. And pray for that purpose in the midst of a terribly altered reality, to know what to do and to live life to the fullest, even in the midst of some odd times. Joshua, we read, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And Christ said as he left, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives, so do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. Let's let go of that fear and selfishness and turn more to giving and loving our neighbor.
Terry, I love it, and I've written this down. As soon as you said it, I wrote it as quickly as I could. The love and care of others is contagious too, and I Absolutely. Think that's a great note to finish on. Thank you so much, Terry.
Thank you for asking me.
All right, folks, another episode coming to a close. We'll have another show for you on Thursday. We're going to talk a little bit about your options of getting into your retirement savings at these times. There are new rules that have been created for that. And I want to remind you about the 6 p.m. show tomorrow. Jennifer Alford with the August House Restaurant, as well as Artius Walker, Smack Shack's food truck. Artius started in his dorm room at Alabama A&M making sandwiches on a George Foreman grill, and now is a notable barbecue specialist in town. It's going to be a good show tomorrow night. We'll have more content coming for you this week. Don't forget to subscribe to the text. I'll send you the things that I promised. And I wish everybody the best luck you can have this week. And I'm going to say it again. Love and care of others is contagious too. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. This is brought to you by Regions. I'll talk to you tomorrow night.